Welcome at Planetary Health Talks, the podcast in which we invite professionals and enthusiasts in the field of planetary health. We discuss its importance, interconnectedness, and application in our everyday lives. This podcast is presented to you by the Knowledge Center Global Health, hosted by Ashish Brahma, that's me, and co-hosted by
Renee Robbers, that's me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Planetary Health Talk. Today we have a special guest, Ulrike van der Stelt. Of course, we still have Renee here.
Hello.
And Tessa. On sound so quiet. But we have Ulrike, our special guest. I think we have a common interest, Ulrike. You worked in Papua New Guinea. Could you tell a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you for the invite. I worked in Papua New Guinea as a global health doctor, tropical medicine doctor. And that has been a few years ago. In the meanwhile, I'm trained as a GP. I finished beginning of this year, 2022. I think your question is, what did you take away from that time in Papua New Guinea?
You can read my mind. It's wonderful.
I think the most, it was a very completely different time than compared to here. So it seems like a different life. But what I really have seen is that health isn't secured by how your healthcare system is doing, but it's how your whole systems in society are, your security, how safe your environment is. If you're able to go to school, if your public health is on track, yeah.
So we're 2 minutes into the show already. We've dived very, very deep.
Very deep, yes.
Thank you, because that is the essence, right? Health in all policies is one way of saying it, but the other one is saying that we should really look at the whole system if we want to talk about global health or planetary health. And what do you think about scarcity in Papua New Guinea? Could you deal with that? Was it hard? Of resources, of staff.
The first thing I learned is that with a small amount of possibilities, you can kind of save 80%. Let's say it roughly like this. So reflection on the Dutch system means we have a very extensive system, and we may not need everything. Yeah, so
that's very hard when you're not exposed to that. I've traveled to Papua New Guinea. I've worked in similar countries. I know that you get to be a very creative doctor when you have scarcity of resources and people, and it trains you in a way to have a different mindset. And if you're a Dutch doctor and you've worked in beautiful hospitals in Holland, perhaps that is a very tough thing to understand.
I think it starts also with the education training. Yeah? So when I finished from my GP training beginning of this year, the first thing I did is I made a completely new framework of what I thought it was health. And it was not only our lifestyle factors included, but obviously our determinants of health. Yeah? That's how I was trained in the Global Health Institute. But what I did, I drew a picture with the planetary boundaries around it. Because I thought, okay, we need to position this health framework within the health of our planet system. And I think, we are trained very biomechanical, very reductionistic, mm-hmm. and not in this systemic approach. So that's the first thing I did, because I felt like after finishing three training programs that we need to have a different view of the world. And I think everyone can learn it, even if you're not having this extensive travel experience.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but you still need to expose about different ways of seeing and different ways of understanding, different ways of consciousness. And it's very interesting, because we exchanged emails and you were talking about there's two specific roles that I take on to inspire other people. And the first one is as an initiator. So you start up things. Could you give us an example what that means to you and what you do with other people when you describe that role as an exemplary doctor?
Yes, I can do that, but I think if I first, I still really feel vividly that moment of the beginning this year. I finished this GP training, and it's all about what motivated me. It was that I felt like I can't just. I know a lot of things, and I think we need a complete transformation of our systems. So I can't go into this GP room and do my trick I learned, which is fulfilling for this one-on-one relation. But then nothing is changing, and then I looked at my son of 2 years old and in his sweet little blue eyes, and I thought, okay. If I would die now, I can't tell my son, sorry, I knew things weren't right, but I just did my trick. So I really felt like a lot of months I volunteered on this. So for me, it was very, very clear that to shape a new future, you also need to start doing other things than you may have known a few years ago.
What Einstein said, when you attack the new problems with the old mindset, you will not get anywhere. It seems like you reinvented Einstein, or at least your methodology, because it's not what you learned. You learned in practice that there's different ways of solving problems, but you looked at the Dutch system, which is different than the systems in Papua New Guinea, and you see that it's not about health only, it's about the system. So how did that click come about? Where all of a sudden you're awake, you wake up one day, you say, oh, wow, I've learned so much. I have so many tools, but I do not apply them in the right way.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
It is that you're asking me now, because I've never really, and I've never told many people, but okay, so for me, I think it's a way of maybe last 5 to 7 years that I got more in this personal development, and then you start discovering new things. But then I also came across psychedelics. I read a lot about it, and especially about this. This deeper idea of maybe consciousness, or about connection. Yeah? So within one of these experiences, I was at home, and then I really felt how Mother Nature was like crying like a wolf. Like it was, there was like a big shoulders which were about to break. And then I just realized that that our environment, our surroundings, it's brilliant and it's resilient, but it's also so vulnerable if we keep on putting pressure on it. So that was really, I think, a deep experience. And then a year later, I experienced a whole trip that. Nature was completely silent. Completely silent.
And the void. Be quiet.
Yeah, but quiet in a really not okay manner. And then I translated it back to my life, and I thought, and I remembered the words of Obama. He said in, I think, 2014, we are the first generations to feel the effect of climate change. And I'm not talking about the future. I'm already talking about now. Mm-hmm. And we are the last one who can do something about it.
Yeah.
So then I realized, okay, then all other things, they don't matter. If this is the biggest task as humanity, where we are... we are faced with, then I should focus my attention, also my professional life, on this topic.
And that's what you did.
That's how it happened. Yeah, it was not an intentional choice, I think, but my own existential crisis forced me also to open this nasty box of Pandora, but then at the same time to find manners. So I decided, okay, this year will be the year that our whole healthcare sector will be changed, will be transformed. So I just tried to find all the possibilities where I could add a little piece to the puzzle and to spread around a little bit magic scent, I don't know, to change things, yeah.
Big dreams, big ambitions, but with great powers come great responsibilities. That's what Peter Parker was told by his stepfather in a cartoon. But I guess it's true. So if you have the talent to see and you're willing to share, you're up for a rough ride and a beautiful one. That's amazing. It's amazing to hear this. And then somehow this ties into that concept that other people would know as planetary health, right? So mm-hmm. how do you engage with that term? How would you describe planetary health? You talked about the whole system, but what would be, for a layman, planetary health?
Health means, yeah. planetary health, it's established in 2015 by Harvard, Lancet, yeah. And it came kind of from the health argument or the health view, and it says our health is depending on the health of the planet, basically. Mm-hmm, it's interlinked. Mm-hmm. So it seems kind of logic. If you dirt your own nest,
if it would be logical, we do something about it, but we don't. So yes. It's not that logical somehow.
Yeah, and I think... as a health professional, it's a no-brainer, but we don't really learn how vulnerable we are and how we depending on the health. Huh? And then what I liked about this this planetary boundary setup. I saw this documentary of David Attenborough and Johan Rockström about planetary boundaries, and then I thought, oh, it's actually very easy. It's a framework. You know what kind of systems are around you, which are
influenceable, which are not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you can do something about, or maybe the engineer can do something about, or the civilian.
Exactly. It makes together. It a little bit easier mm-hmm. to. Mm-hmm. To have that overview, where lays these connections. But then still, this is all very technical or framework kind of thing. But the real attraction for me in this whole planetary health paradigm shift is that it's actually about how we define ourselves according to nature, how our relation is, how our connection is with nature, with the other, with yourself. And that is also in the framework of the education, the planetary health education framework. That's the middle of planetary health.
Yes. So we're not above nature. We are nature. We're part of nature.
We're completely depending on it. Yes.
And that's the other part.
Yeah. Yes. And it's about the quality of the connection we have with it.
Again, that goes back to deep thinking and deep feeling and deep consciousness.
It is. It's definitely about consciousness. And it can sound maybe a bit strange, but everyone has this experience. I mean, if people think back about, last summer maybe, they were maybe on holiday, they were maybe on the beach or in the... And then you can sometimes suddenly feel this... You know, that you're in this moment, all your to-do lists, they vanish to the background, and then you're just completely into awe or gratefulness.
Bliss.
So we have it all, but we only need to...
See it.
Yeah. For me, this is planetary health as well.
I get you.
So it's both the relation and it's the system, the relationship and the system approach.
So the Knowledge Center Global Health is trying to have these global planetary health talks to actually make things more accessible, understandable, intelligible. And again, when you go such profound understanding of what perhaps should change is extremely hard for people. Change in thinking, change in acting, but I think you've changed yourself. after that year, because you became independent worker. You were involved in many different networks. You initiated a lot of different networks. You're involved in policy papers. Could you tell a little bit about that journey you've gone through since that wonderful experience?
Yeah.
How do you go about? Our youth is asking, how do I go forward? Could you tell us how you went forward?
Yeah. Well, I think it first starts with an... it always helps if you're if you're overly optimistic. So I always say, yeah, we can go to the moon and back, and not physically, but I mean mentally. I mean, yeah, you can always have influence. For example, even if you think you're not, for example. So, but yeah, okay. So and so that's the first thing. But in real life, okay, for example, it's also just starting somewhere. I started with Zorg voor Klimaat, the Dutch...
Care for Climate, in English. Yes.
And then we wrote a letter to our Ministry of Health. A month later, we had an appointment after we also... this letter was also published in a newspaper. And we just started, and no one knew how, but they were coming helpers on our path. Mm. A lot of... older professionals, they think, oh, this youth or this younger generation, oh, they have a good initiative to help you. And then, from that, okay, the conversation went very well, but we didn't get any appointments because our whole government was not
in action, in action for a year.
Yeah, so yeah. When can we come back? Well, maybe in a half a year, maybe in a year. But then we said, but it's crisis. So we started with new, don't give up. So we started with a new letter, and then more helpers came. Everyone gave us kind of a key. And then someone said, you should make it a petition. Well, and with five people, a lot of commitment, we just asked everyone who inspired us once in our school career or at work. And then, boom, we had like... 150 organizations, medical UMCs, insurances. A lot of organizations first said we don't sign petitions, but after they realized, okay, the banks, they all started signing because there was nothing in our paper, in our letter, where you can't be against.
Disagreeing with. So yeah. Everybody was in favor of the thoughts.
Yeah. And then again, and a signature is easy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But then it started from this on, we went participating in writing the new Green Deal. I mean, it came on our path. And now last week, this Green Deal published. So what I want to say is you can create opportunities. You can create momentum. Team up. We have ideas enough, and then believe in law of attraction. If it's not going left or right, then go straight through or go backwards. You know, it is. Yeah.
I feel like you just also said about your, I would also almost say, like kind of awakening, because it also made you aware, and also what you said about being on a beach and feeling connected to nature, that maybe it also starts with some kind of awareness of that we are connected with nature. And I feel like sometimes that people are just not aware, because now you kind of already skip a part in my head, because you already start talking about we have to do this and this. But sometimes I feel like maybe people should just be more aware of the connection between health and nature and the planet, for instance. Do you agree, or is it something that, yeah?
Yes, sure. Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying we need to be more aware of the connection, but it's not something that appears suddenly. But I think it's our whole schooling system, what we value in society.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe it was just like a brain spin of me though, but I was just wondering, because you just start talking about the being on the beach, and I sometimes felt like maybe not everybody experiences that way, feeling so connected. But
Yeah. I'm thinking now. I think about the Maslow pyramid. That you first, in your basic layers, you need to have kind of some stability before you even can, for example, think about sustainability, mm-hmm. about, I don't know, bigger systems. And I think in our society, we're all very busy and we put a lot of pressure, mainly on the youth and getting high marks. So, I think as a society, you really deliberately need to take off time, for example. And I think with that time, then you get also more space for this. For some reflection, for some connection, for.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I definitely agree that you first need to be aware. We are just actually basically completely eco illiterate.
Yeah.
What a lovely word.
Yeah, I love it.
I
went to we signed up for this garden 3 years ago, where you can where this farmer makes his grows his garden, and you only need to take it out. And then I introduced myself, and then he said, "Oh yeah, if you want, you can just take some right now." And then I looked around, and I felt so ashamed because I even didn't know how I should take out a carrot from the ground, you know. And.
Yeah, well, there's no shame in learning, right? There's never wrong in learning.
Yeah.
And now you're expert.
My boyfriend is planting, and boyfriend, husband, I don't know.
Same difference. You love the man. Good for him.
No, he's planting now in food forest, so that's his ikigai. Yeah. But we're learning. Just open and be curious.
Yeah, I was thinking about, so when it comes to knowledge or really consciousness, and there's also a lower level of consciousness, which is knowledge and awareness, and then there's consciousness or whatever you want to call it. But you're involved, I believe, in the first classes in the Netherlands that were, you know, electives. People could choose to do training as physicians, non-physicians on planetary health. Could you tell a little bit about how that started? Because it was not a singular-handed process. Again, it was a teamwork, right? The training on planetary health, the modules. First in the Netherlands, I read in your bio.
You're saying that this planetary health course we
yes,
did?
Yes, what I'm referring to.
Yeah, that was with Met Zero, with Laura Warmadam. That's actually quite a nice initiative because it just combines a lot of people who are involved in education, on the floor on sustainability, planetary health, and then we just decided, let's create a course ourselves because
there was no course.
No, there was no course, and there was no faculty also quite interested. So we thought, okay, then we do it ourselves, and then we just start.
Massive open source online.
No, we had like.
Or is it more of a workshop?
We had like 40 students signing up. How many? It was a few rounds, maybe 7 weeks with different teams from planetary health to equity to movement building to communicate.
And these were workshops or activities related, or there were frontal teaching, which I can't believe. But perhaps was good storytelling.
Teaching. How do you say college teaching?
Yeah, colleges.
Yeah,
give a college
and then
lecture.
Breakout rooms, and then assignments, and
so interactivity and thinking, active thinking, participatory.
All kinds of
Yeah, if you have a group of education people around you, that's beautiful. Which leads me on to the next question, because I tend to love Johan Huizinga and his. His PhD in the 1930s, 40s was about the homo ludens, the playful person, and the word ludique in Dutch is because he introduced it. I always have this impression that we learn best by play. right? The rules are not fully defined, or they're defined, but you have to go out there and just sort it out, suss it out. That's the best way to learn.
Yeah.
You're involved in any kind of game currently? Any game development, or is that still a secret?
So where did you read that somewhere? Actually, beginning of this year, I had this idea of, okay, I want to develop a game on this planetary health, but then the time I wanted to take for that, then this code red petition where I was talking about happened in that time. So actually, yeah.
So it got sidetracked. You forgot the game.
I didn't forget. It's just a seed. It didn't pop out yet, but there are many seeds, but this is on hold yet. And I got,
You should call on me. I love games and I love planetary health. So it's really, I believe strongly in that. Serious gaming is one of the ways forward. And it's a way that you can mix roles, right? People, it's always talking about medicine or health here. And actually engineering is important. Education is important. Sociology is important. Economy is important. Finance is important. Law is important. We need all people. Also people that we call uneducated, but probably very wise people.
Exactly.
Children.
Thijs Struik from the Sustainability Games, I had many conversations with. He's lovely. If people like games, they should connect with Thijs. Yeah.
Good tip. Good tip. Thijs Struik. Yeah. Look it up. So
this is actually how my mind works, because in the beginning you asked how some things you're doing is initiating networks, but that's how ideas pop up. We have a talk, and then I think, oh, how can I connect people with ideas, and so they can sprout, kind of. Yeah. So.
Like what you didn't manage to do in the garden, you do in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Your natural talent for people, but vegetables are a different story altogether.
They're a bit difficult. Yeah, they don't talk.
It's easy. It's easy to talk to people and to talk with people.
Creating awareness.
But okay, so in this development of big ideas, do you have like students with you that you guide from all kinds of sciences, or this is really you're the one woman band that finds people and puts them together and moves on to the next band, the next activity, the next thought, the next philosophy. You're building a movement. That's what you said.
Yeah, maybe reflecting on it, maybe it is like that, but it was not. I didn't invent it that way. It just came to me, maybe. But I won't say I am teaching students.
It's okay. You're not teaching students, okay?
No, I'm not teaching students. Basically, these students teaching me, because I'm also teaming up with this very young, brilliant med students. They all have the same vision and the same drive, and I can learn a lot from them.
That's
to be
true.
Fairly honest.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. I say when I teach, I learn more from my students than they'll ever learn from me.
Yeah.
And that's a great deal to have.
Yeah.
And we come to this youth, right? And I have this thought always I hear from Native Americans is that we should think about seven generations past, present, and seven generations forward. How would you explain that to the Dutch society, that we cannot just look ahead 5 years, that we really need to start thinking about and acting about what's happening in 50 years and 100 years? How do you do that mindset change?
For me, it actually really helped to see pictures. Jan Rotmans, for example, from Rotterdam and Drift Center Transition, he has these pictures of the Netherlands and the water and how we live on it and everything. And the first, I knew the feeling, the first time I heard him talking about it, I saw this picture and I was like, oh, these guys are playing another league, you know? I thought, oh, are this this far? I think, you know, imagining that what we're doing is not sustainable, it's very different what it means in 5 years, in 50 years, in 500 years. Mm-hmm. So visualizing it.
Creating awareness.
Yeah.
You draw?
No, I wish I...
You doodle. But just like imagery.
Yeah, I think... Yeah. I think that is one part. And also, it for me, it also helped that, for example, Frans Timmermans at the EU or the UN Secretary, that they really say, okay, we are really compromising on the future. And key persons are in the literature, the Lancet Countdown, Code Red for Healthy Future. So it took me a very long time to digest this and that I really start believing it almost, mm-hmm. Because it takes a lot of abstract thinking.
That takes time, right?
Yes, yeah.
I had a talk earlier today about giving time to time. It's perhaps a nice way to stay at the Himalayas sometimes and think. I see a question. Oh no, I see a hand. I know we are currently at 30 minutes. We still have a while to go. We have a lot of things to discuss still. I think, where are you going to be in 5 years from now? Is there a path that you've decided on? You have going to have your plucking forest, you'll have three children, and you'll be happy with your boyfriend, husband, and you'll be working as a visionary, or what's going to happen in 5 years? Just let it be.
Yeah. I'm very curious, and that's often where life leads me. And I always tell my friends, because it can also be quite tiring if you really want to change things. But I always say, I can take a rest and I can sit on a small
swing.
Couch in the food forest and then just
watch the birds.
Yeah. Well, but then people start laughing at me and they say,
you're 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just... For example, we had this morning a talk with Rector Magnificus from the Radboud.
Yeah, I was curious about that talk. Yeah. How did it go? And what was it about?
Yeah, well, I and Hugo Tau, we proposed, let's do planetary health here. Not at the medical faculty, but with the whole university. And basically he said, well, you picked such a great timing. We love to hear further from your ideas and... we think this is important. So for me, it often starts with a dream, but then I thought, this dream of this basically changing the logo of the university, and adding planetary health to it. I mean, that means that they change their value, right? They say, we find this is a most important thing, and this is our value we stand for. So for me, that is system change. And then we start educating and training our people. So that is one of my ideas. and another thing I hope for is I also established the Planetary Health Hub, and the Dutch Planetary
really?
Health Hub. Yeah. Oh, at least I got the network.
Got it started.
It started, yeah, together with Nienke. And we would love to do some more movement building, for example.
How do you move the masses?
Yeah,
or is it like Margaret Mead says, it always starts with a small group of dedicated people.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And it'll end
yeah.
up with a big group of dedicated people.
Yeah. Be dedicated and have a massive optimism. And I also don't know yet, but it will come. It's just law of attraction, I think.
Yeah. You're very optimistic, and I love it, and that's great. And I'm thinking about McDonald's, who changed their logo, because you're talking about logos, from red to green. Have you noticed?
Huh?
You never see McDonald's, right?
No.
McDonald's is now green. Their logo is green. They call it greenwashing.
It's really the...
I'm not joking you. McDonald's has a yellow arc with red. That's the old logo. The new logo is green.
Oh, yeah.
And we see this in big companies, and you see that in government as well. And I'm not a cynic at all. I'm just saying that when you use your words and use your colors and your images, it can also be used against a movement. So you said that the University of Radboud is changing their logo?
No, I didn't
say that.
That's
your dream.
No,
I just want to make sure that I heard this correctly.
It's not about the logo, but it's about the value underlying it that we are...
You wrote me your value changer. How do you change value?
I tried to act... I mean, any approach would work, I would say, but for me, education is an important one, but I also I'm also thinking about which documents they hold any value in our healthcare sector, but also outside it. And for example, I was involved with the kickoff of the health insurance vision on sustainability. That's one. But I also last year wrote the KNMG, the Dutch Medical Doctor Society. Which person do I need to speak to change the Hippocratic Oath?
And then this is something waiting to be changed, and you just do it, and I think it got changed, right?
Yeah. Well, then I got this very kind reply. Well, that's a difficult question, but we are now starting the process of re-establishing the code of conduct, the gedragscode.
Yes, code of conduct, yeah. Gedragscodes in Dutch, yeah.
Which is probably as close as you can get to. And so that gave me a good opportunity to mobilize enough people to vote for that we are also committing as health professionals that we have a society duty. So that's one of the 15 rules got in there. And the other rule is to take care of the climate and sustainability. Everything, and it was a wonderful committee they had there. So I'm not saying that I made
You're
this
one,
but it was a puzzle. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it definitely wasn't something they really with the information I collected for them together. They had enough leverage to show. There's already a lot of movement in the healthcare sector.
We talked earlier about Papua New Guinea, the laws of attraction. I see a meteorite thundering past, lighting up this earth in a positive way, with positive energy, with deep insights. It takes a tough soul to take all that in. And are there things you're really worried about at this time and place? Even the biggest optimist has to be concerned about things. I say from sorrow comes joy, and from joy comes sorrow. They come together in pairs. So there's something you're really concerned about when it comes to planetary health?
Yeah, well, I'm concerned about the future. So, that's an... I think it's... if you can call it concern, but... I'm, for example, also kind of involved in the network of the climate psychologists. And mm-hmm. Well, you have this whole new dictionary coming up on terms to define eco-emotions, like, I don't know, in English, solastalgia, and eco-anxiety, eco-depression, everything. Yeah, which means that it's also kind of an existential crisis, but my experience also is that once you, I mean, it's like grief, and it has different processes. That's also what I tell my patients in GP room.
GP practice, yes.
Yeah, and then I mean, you also realize you have these different stages, and you need to go through. It helps if you face it, and then grief, and then. Look for connection with others, and then once you start doing and working on it, then the lights are clear, the sky is clearing up, and then it brings also resilience and meaning to your life.
Yeah.
And what is something that really gives you hope for the future, if I may ask?
that comes up, and I need to think now about. I saw a movie from a lady, and she told this interviewer that she only had like in 1 year maybe one garbage of rubbish or plastics or whatever.
Yeah, I think I saw this.
Yeah, and then you start thinking, huh? How are you doing that? It still cracks my mind if I think about it. So I think this is hope, because she is doing something I would never have thought it would be possible. And that same, I mean, that's also what we thought probably years ago, that you never could fly around or anything. You know, so I think hope is also That transformative change is possible. I mean, you need having a lot of good ingredients. Yeah, but I think that's hope.
Yeah, yeah. Beautifully said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about COP27. It's where we're having, for the umpteenth time, discussions about who's responsible and who is not. I don't want to talk about it in negative terms, about conniving or diving, but about hope and progress and increase of consciousness. And it's a big topic on its own, COP27. But what comments would you have for people who are there and people who depend on what's happening there? Like the island of Bonaire, which is going to be underwater for 1/5, I found out today.
Yeah.
What's happening at COP27? Is that what we need?
To be fair, I have never been to a COP. I think that's another world in itself. Yeah. So I can't give any advice to people on the COP. I know some people are there. I have a lot of respect for them. But I think the most important thing is that we keep on telling stories and keep people inspiring.
That's my kind of line.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's so important that, you know, all these smart heads, these academics, engineers, doctors, they do the wonderful things. But common people. I have a story about Native Americans, Lakota. They say, okay, you have the guides, right? You have the shamans who guide you on a travel, spiritual, astral. You have the chiefs who sort out life. We decide what's going to happen in the tribe. You have the warriors who protect the tribe. But in Lakota tradition, it's the common man and the common women who take care of their neighbor, who chop the wood, make sure they have food and warmth, that are the essence of the tribe. So all these highbrow talks with highbrow people in highbrow bubbles will lead to very little if we don't involve the common man. So I hope that your kind of inspiration doesn't trickle down, but embraces all.
Yeah.
And for that, you need a good story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough story because it requires us to be more humble. It requires us to be more centered and requires us to be more kind.
In the first place, to yourself, huh? That's where it starts, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I'm thinking about this COP question.
That's how your mind works.
Backwards. I love your story, by the way. But last year, this was kind of new dynamics. The health ministers of more than 50 countries, they committed a lot of things. I mean, commitment is maybe in the COP terms, maybe can be baked air, gebakken lucht. But anyway, that was something new. The healthcare sectors, they were really starting to change their focus on these COPs. And that is also what happened in the Netherlands last year. A whole big seal went on the direction of a few degrees other way. But as a healthcare professional, we're at 1 million in the Netherlands, for example, out of 70 million. And we are on the ferocity trusted profession index, sky high nurses, doctors. We have been in the past involved with societal transitions with tobacco, but also years ago with hygiene and anything. So as a sector, we can... how do you say?
Spiral up.
Yeah, yeah. We have a responsible there, but we also have an extra key to use. So
because of the respect or the what would the key be for the doctor or the nurse? Why they have a key?
In the first place, because there's a lot of literature also on the effects of on health, and we have seen it with COVID. Eh? Health is one of our most
vulnerable and beautiful values.
Everyone values health, of course. Mm. Yeah. So we just have a story there to explain about stories. Yeah.
So, as we tackle the common man, I want to thank the listener. I want to thank Tessa for making the noise, or actually rather recording it, and René for her bright questions, and moreover you for your honest and beautiful deep shares.
Thank you again for this long and this interesting talk. I can tomorrow I'll reflect on it, and then I gives me new ideas probably. Thank you so much.
That's what Planetary Health Talk is for.
Yeah.
And I want to thank the Knowledge Center Global Health for making this possible. And I hope that many people will listen. And on that note, I will drop the mic.